right, everybody. Welcome back to the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast, episode 48, coming to you live this week. As always, I am Zach Folidor, steering this ship with my co-host, Sam Thillman. Sam, how you doing tonight, man?
Doing great. More playoff basketball tonight. Just enjoying the summer overall.
Yeah, for sure. I got to be honest with you, man. You mentioned the NBA playoffs. I've always been a LeBron fan. I like LeBron. I've always cheered for LeBron, especially when he played for the Cavs. But at the same time, I love watching the Lakers lose. I loved watching them get smoked by the Suns last night. I don't have a dog in the race, so I'm rooting for stuff like that. What do you think about what you've seen in the first round so far?
Oh, I've loved it. Similar to you, I don't have a dog in the race. The Pacers just disappointed me all the way this season. But so far, I've loved every single series I've watched so far, from even the blowout of the Nets and Celtics to the Wizards and 76ers series. Every single series has been fun to watch so far. I'm planning on watching tonight's game as soon as we get done recording. But yeah, just overall, just been enjoying every single series that I've watched so far.
And I just, one last thing I want to say on the NBA before we move into our MAC talk this weekend, Sam, but the Portland Trailblazers organization, they got to figure out a way to get Dame Lillard a championship, because that man is unbelievable. That turnaround step back three that he hit at the end of OT last night to send it second overtime. The things that he does, I mean, he does that stuff on a routine basis, and it's unbelievable. And I just wish he had more help there, because I'd love to see him make a deep run in the playoffs. But unfortunately, I don't think they're going to get past the Nuggets, you know?
I've never seen after a game the amount of people that have wanted a person to be traded since Damian Lillard. And Bucks fans, I talked to my brother, he wants the Pacers, and one of my buddies talking about Damian Lillard being sent here. And whether or not it's realistic or not, but it's just the amount of people that want Damian Lillard to be traded all of a sudden is just astonishing to me.
Yeah, it's true. And I admire his loyalty to that organization. We'll see what happens with him over the next couple of years. He's so much fun to watch. I wish he was more, I don't know. I feel like he's very underappreciated by the sports world at large. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. A lot to get to here in the MAC. And Sam, let's jump right into it here with the news this week. And, I feel like every week we're talking about transfers out of Buffalo, and there's just another layer to that story that's been added this week in football.
If you guys haven't been following the news around Buffalo, we thought the departures were done with the coaching staff going from Lance Leipold's coaching staff to Kansas, following him over there. But that wasn't the case when six Buffalo players decided to follow him over there. I'll list them off real fast. Michael Ford, an offensive tackle. Rich Miller, a linebacker. Ronald McGee, defensive tackle. And then we start getting to some notable players. Mike Nowitzki, the center. Eddie Wilson, defensive tackle. Trevor Wilson, a receiver. And so, Zach, we'll kind of get into this. The first three, I should say, weren't as impactful of names as the last three. I mean, Mike Nowitzki was a big part of that offensive line. Eddie Wilson, just a monster defensive tackle on that defensive line. Then Trevor Wilson, a solid depth at receiver there. I would say the first three didn't hurt as much, but when you got to the last three names, it kind of hit Buffalo a little bit harder.
Yeah, no doubt. And I feel like, you know, the last couple of weeks we've talked about this, and I've been hesitant to be too critical of Lance Leipold, only because I felt like the timing of Kansas firing Les Miles and then taking their time with their coaching search, none of that was necessarily Lance Leipold's fault. I'm changing my tune a little bit here with this, though. I mean, it's one thing to leave Buffalo and take your entire coaching staff with you. I get that. That's been done before. But now to go back and poach, you know, six dudes that you recruited to Buffalo and say, hey, come with me to Kansas. I mean, he's really, really putting his old program in a tough spot. He's not doing Coach Linguist any favors. And like you said, Sam, I mean, Mike Nowitzki is a guy that was, you know, instrumental in their offensive line last year. And now with him transferring to Kansas, all five of their starters from the offensive line that started 2 years ago, they're all gone. He, I think, was the guy that was kind of the catalyst of everything, the center there. It's really tough to lose him. Trevor Wilson really kind of had a breakout game in the MAC championship game, lost to Ball State, where he had six catches for 118 yards. Yeah, this is tough, Sam. I can't lie. If I'm a Buffalo fan today, I'm not too happy with the fact that Lance Leipold is taking some of his guys with him like this.
Yeah, and it was one thing, I think. Okay, you take some of the coaching staff, that's one thing. Like, everybody expected him to do it. I think the amount of coaches that went with him was a little bit insane, but it was expected. But I think at this point, you might as well start calling Kansas the Kansas Bulls, because at this point, it's basically Buffalo's program inside of a Big 12 program. At this point, like, it makes sense from the standpoint of Lance Leipold's trying to bring his guys over, trying to institute some of his culture into the locker room. I mean, it makes sense. It just seems like a dirty move to kind of poach people from your former program. You didn't leave them basically any coaching assistants. You didn't leave them any sort of coaching staff. And now to poach some of the players, you're hurting them even more. And it just proves my point even more. We were talking about last episode of the over-under 8.5. I said 5-7 is where I think they're at, and that these six departures helps my case even more.
Yeah, Sam, I'm with you, man. And you know, I can't ever recall a situation, maybe there is one out there, but I can't recall a situation in the past where a coach has left like this and so many of his players followed him to his new destination. Like, I know, thinking of more recent examples in the MAC, like, I know that didn't happen when Dino Babers went from Bowling Green to Syracuse. I know that didn't happen when Matt Campbell went from the Toledo to Iowa State. Maybe there's an example out there that I'm not thinking of where this did happen before. But, like, to your point, Sam, I think it's not unusual for me to see a coach, you know, get a new job and bring some of his assistants with him. It is a little bit unusual to see this year what Lance Leipold did with taking some of his old players from Buffalo and bringing them to Kansas. I don't know. We'll see how they fit in the Big 12. I don't know if they know exactly what they're signing up for there going into Kansas, which is traditionally one of the worst Power 5 programs. So we'll see if they have any success turning that around. Now, on the other side of the fence here, Sam, obviously a lot of negative news there with a lot of guys leaving Buffalo, but Coach Maurice Linguist, new head coach at Buffalo, was able to bring in a couple Power 5 transfers to hopefully help fill some of those gaps.
Yeah, I'll start off with the grad transfer from Texas Tech, Adam Beck, a defensive back from Texas Tech, moving from Texas to Buffalo. And similarly, he got another Texas guy in Josh Rogers, committed to Buffalo, transferring from Texas A&M to Buffalo. So we're talking about how many people are leaving the Buffalo program. At least Maurice Linguist brought in some reinforcements with some actually nice additions, two Power 5 transfers in, one from Texas Tech, one from Texas A&M. I think it helps that Maurice Linguist has the Michigan experience to land big name guys like this, with so many people leaving, so many people in the transfer portal. So I will say, Zach, even though he's losing a lot of people, these two additions are really nice to kind of patch whatever you're missing from your departures.
Yeah, I agree with you. Adam Beck, you know, 61 tackles over the last 2 years for the Red Raiders. He has started for part of that time. Now, Texas Tech as a program, not necessarily known for their defense, but they have produced some good individual defenders. And I think Adam Beck, he's an athletic cornerback, 6'2", 205. He has decent speed. He can get down the field. You know, he did, 39 total tackles last year as a sophomore. So I think this is a guy, he's a good pickup. I think especially with some of their losses on the defensive side of the ball, he can step in and provide some veteran leadership in the secondary there. I certainly think he's capable of doing that. Josh Rogers from Texas A&M, if you look him up, he's a little bit more of a wild card. This is a guy who did not play last year. He opted out of the season last year. And 2 years ago as a freshman, he only really saw action in three games that year, his freshman year, only had five total tackles. So this is a guy, defensive tackle, certainly looks the part, certainly looks like he can come in and contribute. You know, 6'5", 295. He's a big body, just hasn't had a chance to really show what he can do at the Colgate level, which is, I would imagine, is partially why he's transferring. So you'd like to think that with Malcolm Kuntz and some of the other depth that they've lost on the defensive side of the ball and the D-line in general, you'd like to think he can come in and contribute. And we'll see. But I think these are two promising transfers that Coach Linguist was able to pick up, Sam.
And I not only think that, I think this is a sign of things. We should see a lot more transfers come in. You don't have enough time to recruit 2021 guys. Most of them have already committed to schools. Most of them already signed up for classes. So what you're going to have to do is kind of fill the holes with transfers, and you're going to have to go out and search the transfer portal for whoever you can get to start from day one, because that's who you're going to need to plug in, fill those holes, kind of replace not only the six Buffalo players, anybody else who's gone to a different route than just following Landslide pulled over to Kansas. So these are, I think, two great additions for depth. Not only you mentioned the Malcolm Kuntz leaving, I know they had a linebacker go to Kansas. So Adam Beck should be a nice fit in. But yeah, I think this is, I wouldn't be surprised if Buffalo gets a few more transfers in the day to come, if not months to come.
Yeah, I agree. There's certainly reps to be had there on both sides of the ball. So I can imagine it could be a potentially attractive transfer destination for guys looking to get some more playing time and kind of build their brand. So we'll see what Coach Linguist is able to do here over the next month or so in terms of adding guys as they get prepared for fall camp in August. Moving into onto the hardwood, Sam. Some cool news out of Ohio's basketball team. Some good postseason awards for Ben Vanderplas.
Yeah, Ben Vanderplas over this past week was named the 2020-2021 Academic All-American. And if you don't know what that means, basically had an insanely high GPA and was one of the best not only athletes but student athletes. He actually he's earned his master's in sport administration with a 4.0 GPA. He's currently working towards his master of science in management. And I don't know about you, Zach, I can't even get a 4.0 GPA in college, high school, or whatever, and he's been able to do that while also playing a D1 sport. So I don't know how hard Ohio sport administration program is, and that's nothing to take away from him, but 4.0 GPA in itself, and you're also playing a D1 sport. I mean, just hats off to him.
Yeah, that's not easy to do at all. I'm similar to you, Sam. I did not have a 4.0 GPA in college, and I was not playing a sport. I didn't have any extracurricular activities to distract me, and I still couldn't get a 4.0. So congrats to Ben Vanderplas. Also the fact that he's working on his second master's degree. He got his master's of sport administration already. Now he's working on his master of science in management. So you add on top of that, third on the team in scoring with 12.8 points per game, All-MAC third team, All-MAC all-tournament team. I mean, this is a well-rounded kid. He's going to be successful in whatever he chooses to do after college, even if professional basketball isn't in the cards for him. So a very cool thing. Always love seeing guys get acknowledged for academic achievements. So congrats to Ben Vanderplas there. And also elsewhere in basketball, Sam, moving just north a little bit towards Cleveland, Kent State announced an extension for their basketball coach yesterday.
Yeah, Kent State, as you mentioned, extended the contract of their head coach. If you don't know who he is, it's Rob Sinderoff, who is, in fact, the winningest coaching in Kent State's history. A well-deserved extension. I think we can both agree on this. And it was such a, Zach, it was such a puzzling end to the season. We didn't really hear anything about the Danny Pippen sitting out. Kent State had one heck of a season. They were either, I think they were fifth, right, in conference?
They finished fifth, yeah.
Losing first round in against Ohio, who ended up the MAC champs, and from there on obviously beat Virginia. But one heck of a season overall. I think this season really impressed me from Kent State. Mike Nuga, Danny Pippen's just stepping up to lead this team. But yeah, I think this was a no-brainer by Kent State locking up through the 2025-2026 season. It's just a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Sam. I mean, you look at his record over the years, 196 and 129 at Kent State. They've had 6 20-win seasons in his 10 years as the head coach, and another year where they had 19, so they just missed out on it. Now, I think in some programs, if you're the head coach for 10 years and you've only made the NCAA tournament one time, that might put you on the hot seat. But with Rob Senderoff, though, even though they've only made the dance once in that time, they are consistently a top three or four team in the MAC. This is a team that's always in contention for the MAC crown. Anytime you're in a conference like the MAC, where it's usually a one big bid league, obviously those bids are harder to come by. But yeah, this is a guy they've consistently won under him. They don't have a single losing season. They had 1 year back in 2017, 2018, where they finished 17-17, but that was the worst record they've had under him. I mean, other than that, again, 6 20-win seasons, the winningest coach in school history, certainly well-deserved for him. It'll be interesting to see what their team looks like next year with Danny Pippen graduating and Mike Nuga entering the transfer portal. We'll have to see what they look like next year. But if his past history is any indication, I think they'll be right there at the top of the conference.
Yeah, no question. I agree with you there. And it's one, I think the interesting thing to put in perspective is it's not like football where you can get 6 wins and there's probably 3 or 4 MAC teams that reach a bowl postseason appearance. In basketball, there's really only one team that gets it each year, and to go 196-129, have his worst record be basically 17-17, which is 500, I think is just a testament to his credit. And yeah, you'd obviously like to see them go the dance more than once, but at the same time, it's so hard to get. There's only one team a year, and you have to win the postseason tournament. It's not even you win the regular season and you're automatically in. You have to win the postseason. So I think this is a smart decision by Kent State. It's a no-brainer again. He's built this program to be excellent. And like you said, I wouldn't be surprised them to see them contending next year.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll see what they're able to do next year. And, there's been some non-conference scheduling news trickling out here the last couple of weeks. So I'm sure we'll start to see some basketball scheduling news from some of our MAC schools here over the next couple of weeks. So we'll see what the Golden Flashers are able to put together on the court next year. And some other coaching news, Sam, moving over to volleyball. We had some more news from Ohio in terms of women's volleyball coach Dean Webb.
Yeah, Ohio's, and actually earlier this year, similar to Ball State, their head coach also retired, but recently Ohio's volleyball head coach in Dean Webb announced stepping down after only 7 seasons. He guided Ohio to a MAC regular season title his first season back in 2014 as the Bobcats went 23-6 overall. This past year, he led the Bobcats to the 10th NCAA tournament appearance. And overall, it's sad to see this Ohio volleyball program lose a head coach who's led this program to a lot of success. But obviously, he's thought it was his time to go. Yeah, but as I was saying, just a great head coach for the short time he was there. It's sad to see him go. Hopefully, Ohio can bounce back relatively easily, similar to Ball State's men's volleyball program, which is going to have to rebuild with a new head coach. Similar to Ohio baseball and the fact that they had their head coach retired. So it seems like Ohio, once Frank Solich leaves, they're going to have a lot of programs that are going to have a lot of new head coaches.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. And I think, the Ohio, their volleyball team is in a pinch right now because it's a little bit of a unique situation here where you had the spring season this year, but women's volleyball in a normal year is a fall sport. So they have a short turnaround here, right? They just finished their season, a month ago, and now they got to turn around and get ready for a fall season starting in August, and they don't have a coach. So that is problematic, obviously, for the players on the team currently, also for, recruiting purposes and stuff like that. They're going to have to name a coach here pretty quickly. But you're right, Sam, certainly a good legacy that Coach Webb leaves at Ohio. Like you mentioned, two MAC championships, one regular season title and one tournament title that brought the Bobcats to their 10th NCAA tournament appearance. Also coached in two MAC players of the year, Abby Gilliland in 2014 and Tia Jimerson back in 2019. So certainly a good legacy for Coach Webb at Ohio. Like we mentioned, two MAC championships and a trip to the NCAA tournament. Not nothing to complain about there. Best of luck to him in his retirement. It'll be interesting to see who Ohio is able to hire here on somewhat short notice coming up here in the next couple months as they prepare to get back into a regular fall season, hopefully here in a couple months starting in August. So that about does it for the news here tonight. Let's move into our Twitter question this week. And Sam, I thought we got a great response this week on the Twitter question. Last week, you guys, anyone that tuned in, you know, Sam and I, we talked about the season win totals for football coming out and kind of gave our thoughts. And we posed that question to you guys on Twitter last week and just wanted to get your thoughts on the overall season win totals. Sam, we got a ton of responses here, and there seemed to be a couple common themes there of some teams that, you know, the folks felt were a little bit underrated, a little bit overrated, stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought you could tell me what you thought. I thought the main themes were Toledo was too high, which I agree with. Buffalo's too high, which I agree with. And then, surprisingly, I didn't even think of Miami, Ohio being listed at where they're 4.5. People had an issue with where they were put at. They thought they should have been listed higher in the over-unders. I don't know. Did you have any other takeaways?
You know, the main one for me was Miami, which you mentioned. That was a number that didn't really jump off the page to me whenever we talked about this last week. But then you look at some of the tweets we got here, and, you know, our friends over at the College Sports Connection podcast, Alex and AJ, they responded and, you know, mentioned how Miami has 91% of their production back from last year. And 2 years ago, the last full year of, you know, MAC football, Miami won the conference. So they still got, they got Brett Gabbert coming back under court, under center. He's not talked about like Drew Plitt and Dustin Crum are. I think he's probably a step below them, but he's still a very, very capable quarterback. So I think Miami was the big one to me. The other one was, I don't know. I agree with you on the other ones. Toledo seemed to be a little high. Everyone seemed to agree that Buffalo was a little bit high as well. I have to give a shout out to our friend at it's Berzich. I hope I'm saying it wrong. Nick, he responded to us and he said the easy over for Northern Illinois. He thinks the Huskies win at least 6 games this year. Might be a little bit optimistic there, Nick. I don't know if I see him going that high, but I certainly I like where his head's at. I like his support and his team. I don't know, Sam. I don't see Northern Illinois getting to 6. Perhaps so, if things break their way, they could hit the over on 4 there.
And for me, Miami, Ohio is an interesting case. I looked at their schedule briefly. You jump off the map with at Cincinnati, at Minnesota, play Long Island, which should be a pretty easy win, and then a game against at Army. So you're non-conference. You could be starting out with a 1-3 record, realistically, considering I don't know where the Army program. They also have to play Ball State this year, so I'll get a sense of where they're at. But potentially 1-3, and then their conference schedule, you have a couple of easy wins in here. But Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Ball State, Ohio, Buffalo, you don't know where their head's at. Kent State, Bowling Green's an obvious win. But Miami, Ohio is an interesting case. Last season, they obviously had a lot of injuries. You didn't really get to see the full program. They obviously beat Ball State in their opener and just kind of dipped from there. So I'm kind of interested to see where Brett Gabbert's head is at, if he can bounce back from the injury, because if I think he can or can return to his freshman of the year form, this team could do some dangerous things. I think, like you said, he's not mentioned with the Dustin Crumbs, Drew Plitts of the world, but I think he needs experience for that. He's only coming into his third year. I think this year, if he can take the next step, maybe we start putting him in the conversation, if not his senior year. But this Miami team, I think they're a little bit undervalued at 4.5, but I think a nice safe number would probably be a nice 6 number for him. over under for me.
Yeah, I hear you there, Sam. And I think the exercise for me when we're looking at season win totals, it's always to, you know, like we talked about last week and like you just brought up, you know, look at the schedule. Where are the wins going to come from? I don't, you know, Cincinnati and Minnesota on the road to start the year. Cincinnati, I've seen Cincinnati in some top 15, some top 10 lists that I've seen some preseason rankings. Minnesota right around the fringe of the top 25 as well. I don't know that they're going to win either of those games. I agree with you. I think Long Island is a win. At Army, I don't know. You know, Army is a tough place to play, especially with that, you know, triple option system that they run. And then you got Central Michigan at home and at Eastern Michigan. If those games don't go your way, you know, you're looking at potentially a 1-5 start before you play Akron. And then you got Ball State, Ohio, Buffalo, Bowling Green. I don't know. There's just a lot of coin flip games here for Miami that I think they'd have to win a lot of those coin flip games to get the over for me. So I'm looking at a coin, you know, coin flip games being, you know, I'm looking at Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Ohio, Buffalo, Kent State. I mean, I even maybe throw Ball State in there, even though I think Ball State will have a more of a decided advantage in that one. I could see by Miami getting to 5 wins this year, maybe 6. I don't see them, you know, competing for a conference championship or anything like that, though. So yeah, that was an interesting one. I think that the folks talking about Miami, that was what stuck out to me the most, Sam. And like you said, I think we're all in agreement. You know, James tweeted and mentioned that Toledo seems to be a, you know, a Vegas favorite every year. And we aren't sure why. I agree with him there. Yeah. I'm really excited to see how the season plays out though, and see where some of these teams land.
And one final thing, I want to shout out Scott Russell's first comment. If Western Michigan only wins 6 without returning offense, they have other issues. And I think he's right to the fact that I think Western Michigan can do some dangerous things, but similar to Kent State, it all comes down to their defense at the end of the day, because no matter how much big numbers they put up last season, it seemed, let me pull up their schedule from last year, but it just seemed like their defense let them down time and time again. They should have had such easy wins, whether it was that Toledo game, that Ball State game, but it was their defense in the end that kind of crushed them. So if you're a Western Michigan fan, I think you have to be really hopeful. You have everybody, you have a lot of your returning cast outside of Dwayne Eskridge obviously getting drafted, but it all comes back to their how their defense performs for me.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Sam. I mean, you know, their defense, you gave up last year, you know, 53 points to Eastern Michigan, 44 to Central Michigan, 38 to Toledo. Yeah, not the best defense, but you know, you got Caleb Ellaby coming back under center, a lot of good weapons there on offense outside of Dwayne Eskridge. Obviously, they're going to have to replace him, which is easier said than done, but I do think that there's a lot of promise for the Broncos coming up this year. We'll see how they're able to do. Big game for them opening up week 1 at the Big House in Ann Arbor against in-state rival Michigan. Let's move into the spring sports here, Sam. When I say spring sports, the only thing we got left is baseball. We had the last weekend of the baseball season here this past weekend, the MAC wrapping up. We had Miami entering the weekend with a 2-game lead over Ball State at the top of the standings. They were the only 2 teams that were still able to win the conference championship. Both teams swept their weekend series. So unfortunately for Cardinals fans, Central Michigan maintained that 2-game lead and took the conference crown. They swept Toledo. Ball State sweeps 4 from Miami. Bowling Green takes 3 of 4 from Northern Illinois. Kent 3 of 4 from Eastern Michigan. And then Western Michigan 3 of 4 from Ohio. Sam, I can only imagine what it felt like in Indiana this weekend for you guys. First of all, not getting the chance to compete in the tournament for a conference championship, but also not hearing your name called on Selection Sunday for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I'll start out with saying Central Michigan, they deserved it. They got that 2 win, and then they just swept Toledo. Like, I can't hate on Central Michigan for doing what they needed to do. However, I can hate on Toledo for letting people down once again. They always do. All I needed them to do was beat them a couple times, which in a couple games, I was actually tuning in because the Ball State series was on ESPN Plus, which I couldn't watch, but the Central Michigan series was on ESPN 3. So I was able to tune into games there. There was a couple games there that Toledo, it could have went their way, including a 1-0 win for Central Michigan. It's unfortunate Toledo couldn't get it done, but Central Michigan, hats off to them for getting it done. Now, I will say the selection committee, I don't know what to do, Zach, about the selection committee. Like, yeah. There has to be a point where I saw a tweet where they let in a team with an 88 RPI in, a at-large bid, when Ball State, I think, had like a 13 RPI.
Yeah.
Scheduled a series against Arizona in which they won two games. A series against Kentucky and SEC when we all know how good the SEC is. Got a game against Kentucky. Like, what more does a team need to prove to get in other than just basically transferring to a Power 5 conference and being a Power 5 school at that point?
Yeah, I'm with you, Sam. And I think the thing that would really frustrate me if I was a Ball State fan is that, you know, the common refrain that you hear, you know, we hear it in basketball a lot, or even in football when we're talking about being, you know, selections for bowl games and stuff like that. One of the refrains we typically hear is that, you know, these group of five teams, their strength of schedule isn't there. They don't play anybody. You couldn't say that about Ball State this year, though. I mean, you mentioned the non-conference schedule. They went to Arizona. They split four with Arizona. They split four with Kentucky. They also, I mean, they played Old Dominion, who was, I believe, finished the season ranked in the top 10. And they didn't beat Old Dominion, but, you know, they had, a three-game series there where they lost all three games tightly contested, you know, 6-3. 2-1, 10-5. I guess in that last game they got beat a little bit, but still 6-3, 2-1. I mean, you go toe to toe with Old Dominion, you take 2 of 3 from Kentucky, you take you split 4 with Arizona. I don't see how, you know, you combine that with the conference record going 29-11 in the MAC. I really feel for Ball State here, and like you mentioned, Sam. They finished the season with an RPI of 48. And there are, if you look at the field, numerous teams there that got in with an RPI lower than 48, including North Carolina and Michigan, who were in the last four in, into the field. So you really feel for Ball State, for Coach Maloney and the team. I really feel like they deserved it. And like you said, they just couldn't depend on Toledo to get a win for them this weekend and get the MAC championship, which is too bad.
And you know what's crazy is I went to my high school's sectional championship game, actually both games, one to get into the sectional championship. And I think my high school went 8-19, still had a chance to win their sectional. They did it, and hats off to them, because I never saw my school win a sectional or anything. But the crazy thing is that in high school, no matter how bad you are, you get a chance at the championship. And for college, you can have a crazy record of 38-18, and you still not have a chance at the postseason. I get it. It's limited for a reason, but at what point is the criteria just so biased towards Power 5 school that we just accept that these group of five conferences won't ever get a chance to have other teams outside of being a one bid conference?
Yeah, it's tough. And I don't, there's not an easy answer to that question, because you're right. It does feel like things are very skewed for the Power 5 conferences. That's where the money is. You know, I think the thing that's unfortunate for Ball State here is the fact that, let me say first, I'm not blaming the MAC, but the fact that they didn't have a conference tournament this year and didn't give Ball State the opportunity to earn a bid through the tournament, I think is something that's an unfortunate reality of just what we're dealing with this year. I mean, the MAC, you know, they canceled the tournaments for a number of sports here. We had this similar situation in women's soccer where Buffalo wasn't able to get in. And obviously they've said they're going to reinstate those conference tournaments next year, which is a great thing. But for this specific year, for teams like Buffalo's women's soccer and for, you know, the Ball State baseball team, that's tough. The fact that, you know, they were right there all year and they finish a game or two short and they don't give the opportunity to compete for the conference championship. It's too bad. Hopefully Though the guys on the Ball State team, they can use this as motivation for next year. And, you know, really, hopefully next year get to the NCAA tournament, which they couldn't do this year. We take a look at the final standings real quick. Central Michigan finishes on top, 31-9. Ball State at 29-11 in second place, and then Kent State, Western Michigan, and Toledo finish 3, 4, and 5. And then Ohio and Bowling Green at 19-21, 18-22. A shout out to Bowling Green, 18-22, and their after their program was temporarily canceled last year. Not a bad season for the Falcons at all. But speaking of the team that did win the tournament or the conference this year in Central Michigan, Sam, it was just announced the other day on Sunday when the field was announced that Central Michigan is heading to the South Bend Regional.
Yeah, Central Michigan, as we stated earlier, was the team to get the MAC bid. So they were picked to the South Bend Regional, and funny enough, take on the team that I hate so much in Notre Dame. It just seems like every postseason involves a MAC team playing Notre Dame at this point. We might as well just set that up for future postseason tournaments. But which is unusual in baseball. They do regional kind of pods, have four teams in each regional, and they fight it out from there. So Central Michigan, being the 4 seed, will take on the 1 seed in Notre Dame. The other two teams picked is Michigan, which I mentioned earlier, and UConn. So it'll be interesting to see. It is double elim in college baseball. They do it differently than other sports, and hopefully Central Michigan can at least, if they don't even get the one against Notre Dame, can stay alive to advance to the next round.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know what it is about Notre Dame, but these selection committees like putting the MAC champions in that regional. We saw Miami softball last week in a similar situation, taking on the Fighting Irish. And yeah, similar to Miami, actually, you know, Central Michigan did play Notre Dame earlier this year at Notre Dame. They lost that game 8-4 on April 11th. So I know Coach Bischel and the team are going to be looking for a little bit of redemption here as they travel to South Bend at 1 o'clock on Friday. Best of luck to the Chippewas. You know, these in these sub regionals, you know, anything can happen. Double elimination. You know, if they can win that first game, steal one on Friday against Notre Dame, you never know what they can do against Michigan or UConn in that second game. So best of luck to the Chippewas. Everyone, I'm sure, remembers that magical run that Kent State had to the College World Series back in 2012. So hopefully, or I shouldn't say hopefully, but we'll see if the Chippewas can recapture some of that magic. Let's to close out the show here this week, Sam, let's talk a little bit of football here. Obviously, you know, we're into June now. We're less than 3 months away from college football season, and that everyone's getting excited for it. I know I am. I know you are. I know all of our listeners are. We had the other day the Athlon Sports MAC preseason all-conference team was released. 17 players from Central Michigan, 14 from Ball State, 13 from Western Michigan. Sam, why don't we run down through the first team real quick and just we can talk a little bit about our thoughts.
Yeah, so I'll do the offense and you can do the defense, Zach, but we'll start off with the quarterback. Obviously, Dustin Crum, Kent State, no question there. Kevin Marks and Bryant Kobach at Buffalo and Toledo, respectively, got their running backs in the first team. You got all-purpose running back in Demontre Tuggle, being Ohio. Justin Hall, the active leader in receptions and FBS, being receiver alongside Northern Illinois' Tyrese Ritchie. Tight end, interesting one, Ryan Lewerman from Ohio. Bryce Harris from Toledo being the center. And then you have 5 offensive linemen: Derek Smith from Central Michigan, Mike Caliendo, Western Michigan, Jake Fuzak from Buffalo, Bill Kudick from Kent State, and Mike Nowitzki, who transferred to Kansas from Buffalo.
Yeah, that's unfortunate one to hear there for Buffalo fans. You're one of your guys on first team preseason transfers, which is too bad. Looking at the defense here, we got our D linemen. We got 4 D linemen: Taylor Riggins from Buffalo, Troy Harrison from Central Michigan, Ralph Hawley from Western Michigan, and DeJuan Johnson from Toledo. 3 linebackers: we got Troy Brown from Central Michigan, James Patterson from Buffalo, and Brandon Martin from Ball State, who was the MAC Defensive Player of the Year last year. And cornerbacks, we got Noski LaFleur from Eastern Michigan and Sam Womack from Toledo. At safety, we have Bryce Crosby from Ball State and Tyson Anderson from Toledo. The specialists, we got kicker Marshall Meter from Central Michigan, Luke Elzinga from Central Michigan, kick returner Trayvon Rudolph from Northern Illinois, and punt returner Ron Cook from Buffalo. Sam, let's start with the offense here. Any surprises from you or for you, I should say, on this side of the ball?
I'm going to say offensively, there's a few things that I want to touch on. First of all, tight end, I think it's subjective who you put there, because there's, to be honest, there's not a whole lot of depth there. I think you can agree with me on that, Zach.
Yeah, sure, certainly.
And then I think one thing interesting is the fact that they put Caleb Ellaby over Drew Plitt for second team. I think that's an interesting choice. And I think for me, the running backs were so tightly close that you couldn't really, it's hard to pick one. Like, I think there's a case to put, Ladarius Jefferson over maybe DeMontre Tuggle or Khalil Pimpleton over Tyrese Ritchie for receiver. I think there's so much depth at receiver and running back that there was so much it's tough. You could make a case for anybody. I think the two people that should say are definitely Kevin Marks and Justin All. I think you can make a case for any other spot being changed any other way.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Sam. I think the one that kind of stuck out to me was actually, you mentioned running backs. DeMontre Tuggle from Ohio, not taking anything away from him last year. Yeah, he had a great year, 403 yards, 6 touchdowns. But I'm looking at Teon Dollard from Akron, and this is a guy who was, led them in rushing last year, 666 yards rushing, 6 touchdowns, 6 yards per carry. This is a guy who was voted, he's on here as one of the third team running backs. I think this is a guy that certainly deserves to be a little bit, have higher recognition than that, because he really was the offense at times last year for Akron. And I expect that'll probably be the case again this year. Other than that, though, yeah, I agree with you, Sam. I think not a ton of depth at the tight end position. So I can't take too much issue with Ryan Lerman from Ohio. I was really happy to see Tyrese Ritchie from Northern Illinois get on the first team offense. I think he's a guy who was very underappreciated last year and just has been over the course of his his entire career at Northern Illinois. This is a guy who's coming back as a fifth year senior, led the conference with 53 receptions last year in the shortened season, 4 touchdowns. So I was really excited to see him get first team. I feel like he doesn't really get talked about enough. And then on defense, I think a lot of I think the thing that I really notice on the first team defense is just the amount of veteran talent on here. I mean, you look at the secondary, Noski LaFleur, Sam Womack, Bryce Crosby, Tyson Anderson. These are 4 guys who've been around a long time, played a lot of games. Same thing with Brandon Martin. Same things with James Patterson from Buffalo. Same thing with Troy Harrison from Central Michigan and Troy Brown from Central Michigan as well. I think that's the thing that stands out to me on the defensive side of the ball is the amount of, veteran presence there on that first team.
Yeah, I think the continuity is definitely the theme you mentioned. I think these are a lot of guys that we expect to be on the first team, have been on the first team before, especially James Patterson. I think he was. Brandon Martin was for sure. Troy Brown was for sure. I do want to give a shout out to Samuel Womack for being first team defense. I'm just going to take my praise where I could get it. I predicted this back last year. You can go listen to it. I said this last year, shout out to Sam Womack for representing for the Sams. But I think similar to the offensive side of the ball, there's a lot of changes you can make here and there. I think you can make a case for Christian Albright in there. I think one person that is lacking in here, Anthony Ekpe from Ball State, really a huge presence on that D-line for Ball State. Doesn't get a whole lot of recognition for what he does, but rushing the quarterback, forcing that fumble back that game against Toledo, which was huge. the transfer from Rice, he's been huge last season, and I expect him to have a big impact this season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 5 sacks last year, 2 forced fumbles. I certainly can agree with you there and can understand why you might be upset with his exclusion on these lists. To close out the show here today, Sam and I wanted to talk. We're looking a little bit ahead towards, non-conference games this year, right? We missed them. We all missed them all so much last season, not getting to see, MAC squads play against Power 5 teams or just even other interesting group of 5 teams. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the Power 5, or I should say the non-conference matchups that we're most looking forward to this year. Sam, let's lead us off here. What's one of the games you picked that you're most excited for?
I'm going to start out with the Ball State game. I'm going to go Army at Ball State. As much as I would like to say Ball State's going to go into Penn State and just get a win there, I'm going to be more realistic. I don't know if that's possible. I think they can keep the game closed, but I don't know how likely it is going to Happy Valley. I do think a non-conference game that's more winnable game is a game at home against Army. Army, who obviously had an impressive last season, I think is a more kind of measurable game to see where your program's at. And that's the game I'm looking forward to as a Ball State fan, to see how likely it is we're going to run it back. And if we can come in that game firing, pull out a win against an impressive Army team, obviously they're not Power 5, but it's still an impressive win nonetheless, I think it'll bode great things heading into conference season, because I know we'll need it as a boost. A lot of people are talking about how we're going to hashtag run it back, and obviously we have the talent to do so, but I want to see what that talent is against a non-conference opponent, because we haven't seen a non-conference opponent in 2 years, and if we can put up a solid performance against a respectable Army team, I expect big things from this Ball State team.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sam. I think this game will be a good measuring stick for the Cardinals. Army's always a tough team to play. They run, like I said, they run that triple option offense. They're tough to prepare for if you're not used to preparing for them. So I certainly think that can throw a little wrench in Ball State's plans there. To speaking to your point about their non-conference schedule in general, the Penn State game is a tough one. I do think Ball State will keep that game close, but I agree that'll be tough to get a win in that game. But I think Army, this is a very winnable game, but it's also a good opponent. So I think it's a good opponent to schedule here. And I think if Ball State can knock off Army in this game, you're looking at, realistically probably a 3-1 start. I'm pulling up their schedule right now, and I want to see how this is going to break down, because you look at it. I mean, we got, Western Illinois in week 1, Penn State week 2, Wyoming, Toledo, Army. So, at Wyoming and Toledo and Army, none of those games are easy, but I think Ball State has the talent to get through those three. So I think that the Army game, though, it's a good choice, Sam, because it's a good opponent, an evenly matched opponent, a tough opponent to prepare for. And I think we'll learn a lot about the Cardinals that day, especially their defense. I think if they're able to shut Army down, I think that'll bode well for the rest of the season for the Cardinals.
I agree. And what's one of your games?
Yeah, so my first one I was going to go with, I wanted to go with a couple of, off the beaten path here games that might not get talked about quite as much. I'm going with Syracuse at Ohio. I'm really excited to see this game. I think I'm always excited in general whenever a MAC team is able to bring a Power 5 opponent into their home stadium, which Ohio is doing. This is week 1, first game of the year, under the lights in Athens at 7:00 kick. Here's the thing. Not only is it cool that Ohio is getting a home game against a Power 5 team, but this is a very winnable game for the Bobcats. Former Bowling Green coach Dino Babers, he's on the hot seat right now for Syracuse. Back in 2017, they had one good year in the 2017-2018 season. If everyone will recall, they knocked off Clemson. Clemson was number 2 in the country. I believe Syracuse finished that season 9-4. But since then, it's really been downhill fast. This team went 1-10 last year. Their defense was awful. Their offense was awful. Really not many redeeming qualities to take away from last season for the Orange. Now on the other side of the ball, Ohio, you got true freshman quarterback Curtis Rourke, who really played pretty well last year in limited action. He's coming back. Demontre Tuggle's coming back. You got a lot of starters back on the offensive line. I think not only is this cool because it's a home game against a Power 5 team for a MAC team, but I think this is a very, very winnable game for the Bobcats. And if they can pull off a victory here, I think it would bode well for them for this season. It'll be a good start to the season for the MAC as well.
I think you're right there. I think this is a very winnable game. Looking at Syracuse, their over-under win total is 14th places where Vegas has you. So if that's any indication of where this program's at, I mean, I haven't watched the Syracuse game since Eric Dungy was there at quarterback a few years ago, actually doing some winnings for Syracuse. But yeah, Syracuse, as you mentioned, isn't a good place. Dino Babers is in the hot seat. If Ohio can get a win here, it can definitely set you in the right path, in the right direction, because like I mentioned, I think the MAC East is very wide open this year. I think there's a lot of the MAC West. Obviously you have a lot of teams that should have be tough opponents, but I think MAC East, you have kind of, you should have everybody in a pack. It's not the most tough division compared to previous divisions. Obviously you have Buffalo kind of struggling this year with a bunch of turmoil, but yeah, if they can get a win against a kind of weak Syracuse team, a great ACC win, that should bode well for Frank Solich.
Yeah, no doubt. It could certainly set the tone for the entire season for the Bobcats. So we'll see how that one plays out for Ohio. What about you, Sam? One more non-conference game you're looking forward to.
I went with San Jose State at Western Michigan. I don't think the San Jose State we saw in the Ball State game was the true San Jose State game. It just wasn't. There was a bunch of people out due to COVID. Their quarterback didn't have his full starting core. I think their offensive and defense coordinator didn't even show up for the game, let alone just do anything to help them. And I think the San Jose State had a great season last season. And if they can return to that form, this should be a great group of five opponent for Western Michigan. Obviously San Jose State was, weren't they the Mountain West champion last year?
Yeah, they were. They were
a ranked team last year. If Western Michigan and Caleb Elby can keep up the offensive production that they had last year, it's going to be a great shootout. But again, it just comes down to their defense. Can their defense be better than last season? Because we pointed out earlier in the episode just the ridiculous amount of points they let up. And you can't do that against one of the great Mountain West offenses. You obviously have Boise State, but San Jose State was no joke last year outside of that Ball State game. So a great opponent. I don't know if Western Michigan can get it done if San Jose State is the San Jose State of last year, but I think it will be a great matchup, great fun matchup to watch.
I'm with you there, Sam. I think this is a game to me that has points written all over it. I think both of these teams could score 30 plus points in this game. You know, San Jose State, I agree with what you said about, you know, the team we saw play against Ball State in the Arizona Bowl on New Year's Eve, I don't think was necessarily representative of the team that they put on the field for the rest of the season. You got quarterback Nick Starkel coming back. This is a guy who, you know, started his career at Arkansas and has, you know, or I'm sorry, started his career at Texas A&M, then went to Arkansas, then went to San Jose State. So he's been around, he's played in the Power Five, a high level quarterback. I mean, this is a guy, 17 touchdowns, 7 interceptions last year, over 2000 yards. It's going to be tough for the Western Michigan defense, I think, to stop these guys. They have a lot of production back from last year. They have their coaching staff back. And, you know, San Jose State, their head coach was, you know, he's on a couple short lists for Power Five jobs this offseason, ended up not working out. So he's back for another year. So I agree with you, Sam. I think this is going to be two teams with high-flying offenses that struggle a little bit on defense. So I think we could see a lot of points in this game and should be for a really fun non-conference matchup. I love it when teams from the MAC go out and play teams from other Group of Five leagues. You know, we got Ball State playing Wyoming this year, Bowling Green playing South Alabama, Western Michigan playing San Jose State. I love games like this.
Yeah, no doubt. And who's your final non-conference game to watch?
Yeah. So my last one here, this one's a little bit more high profile. And I think I've seen some folks talking about it, but I'm really excited to see Toledo play at Notre Dame. Obviously, you know, Notre Dame Stadium there in South Bend, Touchdown Jesus and everything. One of the most historic stadiums and programs in college football. Sam, we've talked a lot about Jason Candle on this program and, you know, how he could use a signature win. They tend to struggle a little bit to win these big games. I don't know how, you know, winnable this game is for Toledo. I see Notre Dame ranked in the top 15 in a lot of preseason polls, but this would be a signature win for the Rockets and for the conference if they were able to pull it out. I mean, pretty much everyone's back from last year's team. I mean, Carter Bradley and Eli Peters are both back at quarterback. They have Isaiah Winstead and Denzel McKinley-Lewis back at wide receiver. This is a team that's going to be able to move the ball and going to be able to score. Are they going to be able to stop Notre Dame? I think that's another conversation and a much tougher question. But I do think Toledo has the talent and the tools to go in there and compete with the Fighting Irish. And Sam, I know you'd be happy if the Rockets could go in there and knock them off.
Oh, no doubt. I think I would be happy if they would even be able to keep it close. And I think this game is key for two reasons, to just set the tone for the rest of the season. And if you want to prove to if Jason Cannon wants to prove to people that he belongs as Toledo's head coach and wants to prove that Toledo is actually good and deserving of that 8-win mark that Vegas set for them and seems to set for them every year, it's going to start with this Notre Dame game. And if they can at least keep this game close like Ball State did a couple seasons ago, I think they only lost by like 8. That will prove big things that Toledo's not to be messed around this last season, this season up ahead. Because I think you can agree with me, Zach, people when they played were Toledo just kind of saw them as a joke where they were all kind of talk and no actual like fight, no actual bite. And I think this game against Notre Dame with the new starting quarterback in Jack Cohn, the Wisconsin transfer, if they can at least force Notre Dame into a tough game, I think we'll do a lot in the sense of Toledo fans will be a lot more happier. I think MAC teams will actually have to worry about Toledo compared to past years.
Yeah, they do seem to they just never seem to live up to expectations. I really feel like that's something that has been consistent over the last couple of years. It seems like Toledo always has the talent to be near the top of the conference and to be in the conversation and knock off Power Five teams in games like this. They just never seem to be able to put it all together. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in this one. There's a ton more that we're looking that, you know, we know there's a ton of MAC Power Five matchups coming up this fall. So we couldn't get to all of them. These are just a couple of our highlights. Couple months to go here until football season starts. We'll be talking at least a little bit of football every week moving forward as we get ready for the season. Sam, any final thoughts for the people as we wrap up this week's show?
I do want to say if there's 100% capacity in these college football stadiums next year, don't be like the fans in the NBA playoffs who are just throwing water bottles and spitting on athletes. Like, come on, when did we lose our minds to the point where we're just doing this most ridiculous stuff?
Sam, that's a great point. And I couldn't agree with you more. You see, you know, the fan, you got Russ Wilson got popcorn thrown on him. Kyrie's getting bottles thrown at him in Boston. Yeah, it's like a year we were away from live sporting events and we forgot how to act or something. It is pretty crazy. That's a great point, Sam.
And we went with a whole year without basically being able to go to any sporting event. Basically, it proved that we can have this privilege taken away and you're going to come back and first thing you do is that stuff. It's just crazy to me. I think we forget sometimes that these people are humans too. And you would probably feel the same way if you were in Russell Westbrook's shoes or Trey Young's shoes or anything like that. It was just crazy to me how people just forgot to act. I think there was a person who went on the court of the 76ers game a year ago.
Crazy. It is crazy. Yeah, that's very, very well said, Sam. A good way to end the show. We're all hoping that 100% capacity is back for college football this year. If we do get that privilege, though, let's not abuse it. Let's make sure we're, you know, fans, you're good fans, good sportsmanship, all that good stuff. We don't need to be creating hostile environments like that like, you know, some of the incidents we've seen in the NBA over the last week or so. Well said, Sam. Well, with that, guys, we're going to close out the show this week. As always, thank you for stopping by. This has been episode 48 of the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast. I am Zach Folador. He is Sam Thillman. Thank you so much for stopping by this week, folks. We'll talk to you next Friday.